Next Step 337, November 20th, 2014.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazquez's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast, well, that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, between the contemporary and the ancient. In fact, we look at life through the most ancient of all Christian lenses, namely Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. And of course, this is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes ministry. So if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Well, welcome. It's good to have you here. I was just listening to President Obama talking about immigration. Did you catch that? In fact, he just spoke as I was setting up, and Ken put it over the speakers, and I'm going, wait, who's talking over there? And then up on the monitor, there he popped up. So I caught like the last part of President Obama's speech about immigration, and wow, pretty interesting, huh? Using these examples that we were once like this. And he even said the fabric of our being. And maybe he's listening to The Next Step. I know, actually, I was taken aback a little bit as I was listening to him. Is this kind of cliche, huh? We were once like that. Well, yeah, we use that on The Next Step. I mean, the whole idea of In His Shoes is we were once like that. We were once homeless, and so now we need to reach out to the homeless. We were once without food, so we need to feed the hungry. And that whole idea of we were once and therefore we need to do is one of the cornerstones of In His Shoes, the whole ministry. And of course it comes to us from this greater idea of loving and caring because of responsibility. I don't know, when I heard President Obama say it, you know, my ears perked up. I said, wow, listening to The Next Step, huh? No, but I thought about it. It was cliche. It sounded cliche, but you need to replay those sound bites. It's essential because you always have a new group of people. You always have a new audience. And certainly President Obama is not the first person who said it. There's other people who've said it, but he needs to repeat it. Just as this coming week, we have Thanksgiving coming up, and we need to repeat the whole idea of what Thanksgiving is about. And we'll talk more about that, of course, coming up in just a little bit. Today on our show, we've got a guest. He's from the Netherlands. He's going to be sharing some ideas with us about what he's doing out here in the United States, specifically in the Glendale area. Okay, there. Did I tell you enough? Okay, is that enough of a hit? He came to the Glendale area. Okay, why is he in the Glendale area? Well, we'll find out in a few minutes. But before we go there, let me share with you some of the thoughts I've been having this last few days, especially in light of our last next step. Last week, I shared with you some ideas about thinking outside of the metaphors that we're accustomed to think about, and specifically the black hole with this new movie that's out there, Interstellar, and how maybe it provides us with a model to look beyond the ideas that are so imprinted in our head. Last night we had an incredible Bible study, and I shared with the group that was there this story, a true story that took place in Armenia just over the course of the last few months, where I had a chance to meet with a young blind boy who sang for us. 2 years ago, he was abandoned, completely abandoned. And Father Krikor over there in Yerevan and his wife Anahid adopted him and smothered him in love. And they taught him how to sing. They taught him how to sing, and he sang for us. I put that up on my personal YouTube channel. I'm going to put together a little collage of some of the events and then present it to you on the Armadoxy channel, so hold off on that. But I'll share more with you about the miracle that took place, but suffice it to say that I was just so excited that a couple days ago I saw on YouTube a performance that took place in Moscow. It was called the White Cane event. And there he was. There was this young little boy. He was singing before an international audience. And we saw transformation, all based on love. Now, is it possible for us to think outside of the box? That's what I challenged you last week with that Interstellar, the movie metaphor. And I asked you, can we think about ways of combating violence? And to follow up on that, the events of this past week here in the United States, there's a town called Ferguson, and just, a couple months ago, 2-3 months ago, in August, I believe it was, a young black man, teenager, was shot to death. And the officer who shot him, and since this is a race issue at this point, was a white man. And the grand jury is deliberating whether to indict this white officer for shooting a young boy who was unarmed. And there's all kinds of issues in the case, which we won't get into right now because that's not the point of why I bring it up. I bring it up because what is the answer to violence? Well, I just heard yesterday they interviewed a gun shop owner in Ferguson. Before this incident, he said they sold 5 to 10 guns a day. I was shocked that there's even that many guns being sold in one small little gun shop in Ferguson that day. But here's what's interesting. After the event, that number shot up between 30 to 50 guns a day. 50 guns a day? Think about it for a moment. This is how we answer. If there's violence, we feel like, well, maybe the answer to violence is more violence. Let's be prepared. We want to arm ourselves. And we do this very nicely with, again, cliches, which we throw out there. This is in self-defense. And certainly you have a right to self-defense. This is what the Constitution guarantees you. And so here we have this opportunity to pick up guns because that is the way to defend yourself. And all I did yesterday was I challenged at our Bible study, it was challenge the people, and I did with you last week. Is there a way that we can answer that violence in terms of love? If Jesus Christ is telling us, love your enemies, is it possible that there might be something there? There might be another answer. And it was a fantastic Bible study, if I do say so myself, because we had a lot of discussion, we had a lot of interaction, and certainly this model, this video that I shared of this boy, here's an answer to ugly evil, abandoned young boy, blind as he is, and the smothering of love, how that changes. So I'm going to be preparing something in the next few weeks, and I'll share that with you, but I thought I'd give you a little prelude to that, because I want to always keep it in our perspective and in our focus that there are ways to combat evil that are not evil-based. And certainly that's the reason why we started the Inner Shoes Ministry, right? A great evil such as genocide had taken place. And how do we combat that? How do we answer such a despicable, such an atrocious activity as genocide, the annihilation of a people. How can you possibly combat that with anything, especially with more violence on genocide, the ultimate violence? And these are important topics because, as you know, just last week, this continues. The Azerbaijani government, or the Azeris, shot down shot down a helicopter, and three crew members on that helicopter, an Armenian helicopter, were killed. And this is just a follow-through of the genocide. Okay? It's basically hating somebody so much that you're not even willing to ask the questions. Just let's go ahead and shoot. So genocide, as I've shared with you many times, when my trip to Rwanda with our work and activity in Darfur, to me, genocide didn't end in 1915 after the Turks killed us. Of course, it continued with the Holocaust. It continued in Cambodia and Bosnia, and it continued in Darfur, and today it continues with these acts of hatred. Now, think about this. These are not separate incidents, but these are the manifestation of the same evil, the hatred that people have towards other people. So can we position ourselves so we start responding in different manners? Responding, as Christ would say, respond with love and forgiveness. Well, it sounds cutesy out there. You know, we have to love, we have to forgive, all you need is love. It sounds really cute, it sounds nice, it sounds cliche, right? But is it real? Can we use these as weapons? Yes, you can. And that's the word that I'm using. You can use them as weapons. In other words, to annihilate the enemy with this total power of love. And the demonstration, well, we see it in these miracles. We see it in the transformation of evil to good, or as the Buddhists would say, taking that poison and turning it into medicine. Ah, can we do that? Yeah, well, we're going to get there, okay? These helicopter pilots, by the way, are remembered in our prayers this Sunday in particular during our Divine Liturgy and Requiem service. We're going to be remembering them. But in the same tone, we're going to also remember the violence. We're going to remember the hatred and realize that we have the ability to change that violence. I'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks as we get closer to the celebration of the revelation of love, namely Christmas. For now, I'm going to take a break right now and play the song of the day, which we do every week. Picked out a nice one today, one of my favorites from Nune. It is a Syed Nova classic. And then after we get back, we're going to be interviewing a young man from the Netherlands. Name is Rick Adrians. And he is a doctoral student of anthropology. And he came by because he's doing a dissertation on Armenian media in the Los Angeles area. So where else are you going to go except you're going to go to Glendale? And he's been interviewing all kinds of people, including me. And after he spoke, I said, wait a minute, this guy from the Netherlands talking to me? How about if I talk to him? So I invited him to come by the studio, and he did. And we had a nice little chat, which I'm going to turn the microphone on and let you hear that, okay, in a couple minutes. Right now, the song of the day. Enjoy. Thank you.
aransku silgulur vi dastamazut nam çuti aransku silgulur vi enduhama kudes nolan bir cam hemen kum olur vi yipmut num ismi cülüsüman şan şuh işaran gisano yipmut num ismi cülüsüman şan şuh işaran gisano
Rangizanum, I love that. That is the unmistakable voice, talent, and energy of Nune in one of my favorite Xayat Nova tunes, Badgir Kiskalamov Kashads. Oh, I can listen to that all the time. Actually, I've got a really cool recording of that. One day I'll have to share that with you too. It's a live recording, so it's got all kinds of little defects in there. But despite those defects, you're going to love that. Anyway, this was Nune, and I will put a link on our show notes so you could check out not only this song, but all of our great music. Here at Great Apostle West Studios, Rick Adriaans. He is a doctoral student of anthropology from the Netherlands, huh? You come all the way from Netherlands, researching Armenian media in Los Angeles area. Wow, can you imagine that? His dissertation is on how technology impacts the way of being Armenian, I guess Armenian identity in the contemporary world. So first of all, I want to welcome you and thank you for spending some time with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
So Rick, a couple days ago he came and he approached me doing an interview with me on how technology impacts Armenians. So I'm turning the microphone around on him and asking him, what inspired, where in the world, in the Netherlands, did you say, wake up one day and say, let me go and work on some Armenians? How did this all come about?
I think it started several years ago when I was straight out of high school. I was studying music for a few years. And one of the classes I had was an introduction to ethnomusicology. And there we once had a lecturer who gave a, who taught like one class on the duduk, which was something an instrument I'd never heard before, and I still remember like when I heard it, it was such a unique sound. And was it a clarinet? Was it a flute? What is it? I became really captivated by its very unique sound. And I think at that time I wasn't too aware of Armenia, where not even where it is, I guess. But it kind of caught my attention, and several years later, like 2 years later, I switched to anthropology, and this was pretty much at the time that I was also happened to be reading a novel on turn of the century Baku, and it was about the Armenians living there, the Georgians living there, and the Azeris living there, and I just got fascinated by this part of the world, which I had no idea at first even where it was, and it seemed such an interesting interesting place, the entire region.
And so technology, how did the technology factor figure into the Armenian factor?
As I was doing my research in Armenia, Armenian popular music and national identity. So I was studying things like, much to the dismay of some people, Rabi's music and all the debates surrounding that, but also the production of Armenian music videos. And there I came across a kind of subgenre of Armenian folk pop music that is dedicated to folklore of Western Armenia. And I realized as I was studying these music videos that what these people were doing, they were recreating Western Armenia as they imagined it was before the genocide. Using technology, so they would, some of them would travel by bus to Turkey, and there perform like the dances of Sassoon in the traditional folklore dress, and in a way they would create like usually. When Armenians picture Western Armenia, it's like empty lands with no people. But in these videos, they use technology to create a kind of virtual Western Armenia. So this kind of is something that that made me interested. And at the same time, I noticed as I was doing my research in Armenia, whenever people would invite me for a dinner or there was a birthday, there would always be a Skype in the living room. There would be a laptop where someone would call in, perhaps from Russia or from Glendale. And sometimes I would also be asked to introduce myself on Skype. So this is, I think these are two factors that really made me realize that through technology, like both the link between Armenia and its history, they change in a way. Like there are possibilities of reimagining how the past was, but also in the present, it changes the role between the diaspora and the homeland. It's no longer that you have to wait for 2 weeks or maybe a letter will never arrive. You can like instantly, people can be in touch instantly with each other.
You know quite a bit about Armenian culture. In fact, I just found out today that you even read Armenian, right? And yes. I heard you the other day talk Armenian. So it's more than just a wanting to know about technology and how Armenians, but there was a love. There was something that attracted you to the Armenian culture. Can I find, what was that? What is that heart string that was pulled?
I think besides the music, which I already mentioned, that for me the language, Armenian language, is something I can never get tired of learning new things. It is the sound, but also the alphabet. There is such a beauty to it that it just it always keeps me every new word I learn is a joy, you know, in a way.
Well, I wish my listeners could see the big smile on my face right now. You said that you had listened to a lot of our podcasts, and obviously you know that the direction that we take it in is the spirituality of finding some kind of treasure within Armenian, in our case, Armenian Orthodoxy, that can speak to the rest of the world. Do you find that? Do you find that there's something, let's say, esoteric, something within Armenian culture, Armenian religion, Armenian language, music, that can that speaks to the world or should be speaking to the world. Do you find that, or am I putting words in your mouth? I don't know.
Well, I think in my experience in many in Armenia, compared to some neighboring countries, Armenians don't show their religiosity like ostentatiously. Like if you in Georgia, if you're sitting in a taxi and the taxi driver passes a church, the driver will always like, or not always, but at least if you're in a minibus, many of the passengers will make like a cross sign. And I think with Armenians, the religiosity is often more a personal. It's not. Although there are of course also symbols like the ever present cross.
Now I remember the other day when you were interviewing me, you mentioned that. You notice that within Armenian cars, on the mirror, you will see the cross. And so I'm not following. You're saying that maybe Armenians aren't expressive of that, but you, from the outside, are looking in and seeing that everywhere there's crosses. So maybe a little bit more on that cross.
I think the it is where you can see how the religious and the national identity really, really merge in Armenian culture. Like I've also been doing a study of souvenir production in Armenia, and I was amazed with the devotion that some of these people who make the souvenir crosses, like stone carvers, that they have this extreme devotion to the original khachkars, the cross stones. Like they would like make miniature reproductions of these cross stones, and they would replicate it to the level of detail where if a piece of stone would be chipped off from the original khachkar in a souvenir version, they would also chip it off. Like they would really view it as something which seems to have a soul of its own. I mean, it's something of such a great importance to make us perfect.
To have the flaws in there as
that
well.
That as well, yeah.
Wow. So in looking at, let's say, Armenian culture, and you mentioned, actually, I want to make a point that you are the one who put culture and really religiosity together, because I know that you've also done some interviewing with people who might say those don't belong together. Looking from the outside and looking at this vast history, do they belong together? Are they together? Are they intertwined, or can they exist separately? This is a big question that we always have.
Yeah. Well, as an anthropologist, I am not, I don't feel that it's my position to tell people like how they should shape their identity, but
certainly you can analyze it.
Can analyze the way it works. Well, I think they are very much intertwined. At any level of Armenian culture, you can see, for instance, if you walk into a supermarket in Armenia, to give a very trivial perhaps example, a lot of the products will be decorated with pictures that are taken from like decorations, miniatures, paintings from even like biblical illustrations or the whole Ararat myth of Noah. You can not view it separately from Noah's Ark. So I think they are very much intertwined, and that makes it also very hard to disentangle them. Where does the one start and where does the other end? I mean, if a pack of cigarettes or a bottle of cognac is named after Noah or Ararat, is there still a religious identity dimension there, or is it just national identity?
Wow.
It's always an interesting question.
I've never thought about that. Yeah, we do have cigarettes named after Noah. We have cognac named after, yes, religious figures and religious places. Wow, interesting. which maybe says that, you know, there's more of a celebration in Armenian life about, you know, taking life a little bit lighter than most people do. Maybe explaining why we've existed so long. And let me get to that. Rich culture, rich history, nobody knows about us. What would you say, as an anthropologist, as somebody who studied this, what do you think is the enduring power of the Armenian people? What is it that, that keeps that spirit going, despite all the odds that we're still around?
I think it's this is a, one of the biggest questions.
Mystery.
I mean, yeah, it, I think this question itself is very constitutive, very much shaping Armenian culture. Like very often, if I interview people, they will express their amazement that their people managed to survive in spite of all the odds, all the why or how it managed. I cannot.
That's
put
fair
my,
enough. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know who can, but I just was curious. I want to go back to earlier. You said that you started off in music, and that's always been a fascinating point for me because music is speaks to us at different levels and so in so many different ways. Armenian music, when you come to it. I take a more mystical approach and I listen to this, but you mentioned that you enjoyed Robbie's music. Now, you probably know all the background to it and everything.
Yeah.
Some people would maybe question, is that Armenian? Is that, how do you go around that?
Yeah, I think it, the Robbie's topic is a really a major divide in still in contemporary Armenian culture. There is the word itself is very often used negatively, like oh that is such a Robbie's person, or the way someone dresses, or even a building, it will negatively be called Robbie's. And I think it. Also, one of the things underlying it are the conflicts with the neighboring countries of Armenia, because Rabi's music tends to take like a lot of elements from Arabic, Turkish, Azeri music, and I think it was less problematic before. Before independence and the Karabakh War, if you listen to people or read some of the like how popular, for instance, Azerbaijani Muğam music was before the, especially in the neighboring areas, whereas after the war it became very much a taboo and like a kind of there's a strong sense that people should get rid of what elements of culture that were like shared between the two countries, and I think it's the same goes if you listen to early 20th century recordings of Ottoman Armenians who managed to flee the genocide. Many of them will sing in Turkish or adopt elements of this music, and even I think until the 70s, a lot of this here in California as well, this kind of Kef style.
It's still very prevalent.
I don't know how prevalent it is today.
Just last week, in fact, one of the older singers, Onik Dinkcan, had a concert here.
Yeah.
It was very well attended and just loved by everybody. There's a big following. But it's sort of like nobody talks about it. Would you, based on your definition, would you say Sayat Nova was the original Rabi's?
That's, I wouldn't take that for, no, I don't think anyone would want to talk to me again if you call Sayat Nova Rabi's. But of course, he was a very multicultural figure,
yes, yes.
Singing in four different languages.
Absolutely.
And but I think in the issue of Rabi's, there is also there is a class issue that it's generally in Armenia, it's the music of common people who are, often have backgrounds in the countryside, who are not like part of the cultural elite. And I think it is usually denounced by the more people consider themselves the more educated
or aristocracy,
yeah, in a way. Which, but I think it is important, not even if you judge it, to try to understand its appeal. And I think its appeal is largely has to do with the fact that it is very, it deals with issues of everyday life. There are Rabi's songs about going to the army. There are Rabi's songs about a friend moving to the diaspora. There are songs about there are songs for births. There are songs for I don't know, one of the most famous songs of Aram Asatryan is Surp Sarkis. There, so I think this explains why it speaks more to some people than, let's say, Komitas, even though, I would never deny that musically Komitas is infinitely more, like a musical achievement.
Well, than don't go there. I mean, don't go there as far as we don't need to make the value statement. Music is music, and so I'll just take it for what you said. Sure. Now, let's go back to anthropology. Would you say that Rabi's is a means of survival? That this way they created an identity to survive against, say, an elite class? Or is it an identity? Anthropologically.
Yes, but at the same time, I think the irony is that in Armenia today, Rabi's culture is both a culture of the very poorest, and it's also the culture of the new rich. So it's like the owner of like the most famous Rabi's club in Yerevan is a well-known oligarch, Lefik Samo, and there this is also I think a source of the resentment towards the phenomenon that like the aesthetics of Rabi's, not just the music but also let's say this kind of sentimental neoclassical architecture is the kind of buildings that are built by the new rich in Armenia, and I think this, so there is an element of resistance against overly limited definitions of what Armenian music can be, but at the same time it's also like appropriated by a class that is actually very powerful in Armenia today.
In this discussion, if we can if I can ask you, I guess any group that is picked on, for lack of a better word, or is marginalized, will kind of find their own parameters by which they want to express themselves. And so we find that here, especially in Glendale, Southern California, during the last wave of immigrants, let's say from the years 1990 to 2000, we had these Armenian gangs that were formed, sort of like a protection, sort of like a way of identifying themselves. Sometimes when we have these cultural blasts where they're defining it by music and everything, people will join these, and it's a way of identifying. Now, what I was really surprised was there is Gagik Zarukyan. Thank you. I needed you to correct me on that one. Zarukyan, who has built this incredible church that I saw last month for the first time in Abovian. Incredible that it was over the top. And to me, here's the interesting thing. To me, looking at it, I would say that how dare you spend this kind of money when there's people on the street who need the money, who are starving, people who are finding difficulty making their payments. Mm-hmm. And yet the people on the street are applauding this and love this man. How do you explain this?
Well, I think it's part of a wider trend among the Armenian oligarchs to use culture, national culture, as a way of charming people and changing their reputation. I think maybe 10 years ago, a lot of people still had this idea of the people like Gagi Tsarukyan or Samvel Alexanyan, that they're this semi-criminal figures. Whereas nowadays, a lot of people actually get angry when you call them like Lefik or they want respect for these people, and I think they are using culture in a way to buy or to find this respect, the respect that they want. Like when I was in Armenia, there was the Pak Shuka, the central market hall in Yerevan, was half demolished and then transformed into a shopping, like a big supermarket, little shopping mall kind of structure. And there was a small group of people protesting this every day. And interestingly, they were using folk dance music in their protests. Like they were doing folk dances to show that like this is a part of our national heritage. The market hall should remain as it was. And then one day, Samvel Alexanyan's supporters, they staged like a Rabbi's party in front of the Pak Shuka building on Mashtots Avenue street. Yeah, so I think there the culture is really a way of getting people to respect the authority of these oligarchs, whether it is like a lot of these people, when you ask them about the transformation of the Pak Shuka, they will say that it is much better now, that now it's a modern building, that even though it was an illegal, like it was a listed monument, there was no permission to change it like that. But people think that they were even shouting things like Alexanyan Barerar, which means like a philanthropist or a well-doer, to show like their admiration. But at the same time, like most of these people who were supporting him were actually employees of his supermarket, and many of them, when interviewed, were actually admitting that like they were sent to support him there. So I don't know how effective it is in the end.
Yeah, and there's so many different dynamics at play. That's what I found in really Armenia. It's very difficult to say. It's a question of class. It's not a question of conscience. I mean, there's so many different factors at play, but I want to thank you for taking the time and being with us today. And I know you've stimulated all kinds of thoughts in my head. So I'm hoping you've done the same with all of our listeners. Yeah. I want to wish you all the best and good luck. And I hope you'll join us again.
Thank you very much.
You're in Southern California.
It was a pleasure.
And are you heading back soon?
I'll be here for 3 more weeks.
Okay, well. So. Best wishes. You're going to be here during some great times, especially the holiday seasons. First time in America?
No, third time already.
Okay, so you kind of know. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, God bless you and thank you very much.
Susie here again. Before continuing with this broadcast, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there is a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So, we look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Razgan.
Announcement, as you can tell today, right? I have to apologize for that sound quality a little while ago during the middle of the interview. Of course, we didn't have Ken with us while we did the interview, and we ran into some of the usual problems we've been experiencing this last few weeks. Anyway, we are determined to resolve it by Thanksgiving, and we want to make it a Thanksgiving promise because we are so thankful to all the generosity we've seen, to all the prayers that we're getting, and we're going to be putting that money to good work and definitely upgrading the equipment. So hopefully we will not experience what we experienced today. Now that being said, I hope you enjoyed the content of that. I thought it was fascinating, just a wonderful young man to be engaged in a dialogue this nature, especially some of the things he threw out, you know, creating Western Armenia according to what they imagined via technology. That's what he started off with, right? Creating Western Armenia via the imagination. I mean, think about it if you want to think about it. We've been exiled for 100 years now, and anything that we do have is based on our imagination. And now technology gives us the means by which we can create those virtual environments. Very fascinating. Of course, the whole idea of technology in the church, in his case, he was anthropologically looking at it as a means of preserving identity. But you can't discount the role the church has taken in exploiting technology when you think about the first printing press, right? Gutenberg Bible, remember? Think about stained glass windows, right? Why were stained glass windows? Why did they come about? Well, these are just the cutting edge of technology at the times. And today, certainly what we're doing here via the internet, we've been doing for the last 30 years, using a technology to get the word out, to get the message out. And we are in sync with everyone that has come from the beginning of time, since the first apostles went out and said, hey, we've got a message, and this is how we're going to share it. And we're doing the same. Now, you know, next week, next Thursday, happens to be Thanksgiving here in the United States. I'm going to dedicate next week's show to Thanksgiving and the season of Hisnag, which we touched upon last week. This is going to be a good show, and I hope you will join us next week. Until then, I want to remind you to get on board and follow us on Facebook. Like us, do all kinds of stuff, interact. And I also want to point you to some of our other broadcasts, especially Inside the Pomegranate. I had a really nice one this last week about being thankful, and Anush went into a whole list of people to be thankful for. And also check out our latest blog. It's a really great one. It's written by Anna Harmandarian. It's called The Grandview Days, D-A-Z-E. You got to check that out. Just some wonderful, wonderful writing. And again, issues of identity, issues of faith, of spirituality, all these things come together at apostle.net and Facebook. Well, you know the routine, at all the usual venues. Hey, listen, I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, Vahir, our webman, this is Father Vazgan, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the Thanksgiving next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Whatever the laws of of any state are broken, a duly authorized organization swings into action. It may be called the state police, state troopers, militia, the rangers, or the highway patrol. These are the stories of the men whose training, skill, and courage have enforced and preserved our state laws.